welcome back to the commentary.ca, the commentator, analyst, former MLA, former special advisor to two NDP premiers, and the man behind strategicthoughts.com, David Schreck. Good afternoon, Dr. Schreck.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Someone asked me, why do I call David Schreck Dr. Schreck? You have a doctorate degree, do you?
A PhD in economics.
Ah, so all that economic stuff that you have on your site isn't jive that you're running up the flagpole, right?
Right. I try to do some hard-nosed research on my economic articles. I try to do hard-nosed research on all my articles.
Very, very good. Has this been a long 4 years for you as an NDPer?
Well, it always amazes me as I grow longer in the tooth how time flies by in the blink of an eye. I think it's been a painful 4 years for most British Columbians as government cut services by between 30% and 40%. They sold BC Rail when they promised not to. They doubled the gambling when they promised there'd be no expansion. They cut the funding for the Ministry of Children and Family Development, basic child protection services, by $200 million per year. The litany of broken promises has been painful for all British Columbians.
Do you have a role in this campaign?
Well, I'm continuing to write for my website and do my usual commentary. I'm not actively involved in any aspect of the campaign other than what I normally do, which is provide punditry.
You're not being sought by the NDP?
I am not volunteering in any capacity.
Carol James, what do you make of her as leader of the party? And do you think that she's done well in putting her profile out there for voters?
I think Carol's doing an extremely good job. A good test of that was on day one of the campaign. The campaign bus stopped at a hamburger joint in New Westminster, and the president of the Young Liberals decided he was going to storm the event and try to embarrass Carol. And Carol just let it roll like water off a duck's back, and when asked about it, she turned to the media and said, "I encourage more people to participate in politics. It's good to see young people out."
I saw that guy on the news. He looked like he was having a stroke or something when he was being interviewed.
And I think it shows the difference between the Carol James campaign and the Gordon Campbell campaign. The Gordon Campbell campaign is surrounded in tight secrecy. No ordinary people, let alone a heckler, can get near it, although even with that secrecy, there has been the odd individual who snuck in. But the Carol James campaign is a detailed itinerary, 3 pages long for today, for example, goes out with the news media, and an attempt is made to contact ordinary people.
I ask this of all the guests that we've had on about the election. I'll continue to ask this until the election day. How important is this election for British Columbians, or is it not important at all?
Well, every election is important. I think if you want to keep ICBC as a public automobile insurer and not face the kind of problems that we've heard about with automobile insurance in the rest of the country, if you want to keep BC Hydro from being further privatized, if you want to have health insurance is publicly operated rather than contracted out to private surgery centers, then the election's important to you, and you have to choose between what Gordon Campbell's likely to do and the NDP.
Is the Campbell winning, the BC Liberals winning, is that a foregone conclusion?
It's not a foregone conclusion, but he goes into the campaign tested by three different independent polling firms. Strategic something or other that was in the Globe and Mail yesterday, Ipsos Reid and Mustel Group all showing an 8-point lead for the Liberals. In addition to that, he's got buckets and buckets of money, millions of dollars in corporate donations. The NDP actually raises more money from individuals than the Liberals do, but the Liberals then turn around and get between $6 and $8 million per year from corporations. So with that kind of money and that kind of lead in the polls, there is no question that the NDP is extremely challenged to try to close the gap in 4 weeks of campaigning.
How do you think, with all the negativity that's happened these last 4 years, you know, people don't like Campbell, that's obvious, drunk driving and that sort, how do you think he's been able to get past that and he seems to be doing fairly well. I mean,
He's got a solid core vote of probably 30-35% that would vote for him no matter what he does. Just witness some of the business organizations, which when the NDP was in power, if it ran deficits, you would think that the earth was crumbling. When Campbell incurred $3.5 billion in deficits, they said, oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for Christmas in July and giving us our massive tax cuts. So there's a certain element of traditional politics laced with heavy hypocrisy that shores up his core vote. On top of that, he delivered for the top 10 or 15% of income earners with massive tax cuts, then shifted the tax burden by moving to regressive taxes to penalize people who are less likely to vote for him. So he's got a very good core. What puzzles me on the polls is that the polls show that upwards of 60% of British Columbians want a change. They don't approve the Campbell government. Yet that means some people who want to change and don't approve of the Campbell government also indicate that they're going to vote for the Campbell Liberals. The campaign is about trying to reach those people and change their minds.
Sorry, I lost you there for a second. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. What I was saying is that there are people who obviously disapprove of the Campbell government according to the opinion polls, but they say that they're going to vote for it anyway. So what the campaign's about is reaching those people and changing their minds.
But don't you think that people that don't like him and could never see themselves voting for the NDP would end up voting green? Is that going to be a factor in this campaign?
They could vote. There are 44 parties, I understand, running, and somebody's going to vote for each and every one of them. So it's not just NDP or green. It's NDP or any of these 44. And when the opposition to Gordon Campbell is diluted in so many different directions, when there's only one party that stands a chance of replacing the Campbell government, it plays into the hands of Gordon Campbell and helps keep him in power.
But only three parties out of the 44 will participate in that TV debate. Adrian Carr is one of them.
Only three will participate in the TV debate, and in Adrian Carr's own words, it'll be a major breakthrough if they can elect one MLA. So her goal is to try to elect one MLA, presumably herself. The NDP's goal is to certainly form a substantial and credible opposition, ideally to form government, and it's capable of either of those outcomes.
Where are the NDP seats? Where are they thinking of winning seats? Is that in the Lower Mainland, the island?
Well, throughout the province, the NDP is particularly strong on the island, especially the South Island. A former member of the Green Party is our candidate on North Island, showing some recognition that the NDP is both environmentally friendly and the realistic alternative to Gordon Campbell. I would say in the Lower Mainland, there's probably five seats in Surrey, four or five in Burnaby and the west end of the Fraser Valley, several in Vancouver, which are all extremely competitive and likely to go NDP. The seats in the Kootenays and seats in the north, like Bulkley Valley, Stikine, are also very likely to go NDP. So the NDP's likely to win in seats in every corner of the province.
And how has media coverage been for the party? Has it been, are you satisfied with it?
I don't think anybody can complain about the media coverage. Once the election is called, no matter which paper you look at, every effort is made to provide equal coverage to both of the major parties. Unlike the pre-election period, where the government dominates the agenda and sets the agenda and the media report on the government announcements, once the election started, they are on equal footing and I think get about the same amount of ink and media coverage.
One more thing before we get into STV and why you're opposed to that. What do you make of star candidates? Both parties seem to have star candidates lined up in this election.
Well, I cannot understand why a candidate like Carol Taylor has been appointed by the Liberals to run in one of the safest Liberal seats in the province. You would think that if you've got a star candidate, you'd want to run that candidate in a riding where the star power could make a difference in the outcome. The Liberal backbench must be particularly frustrated when they look at some of the people that Gordon Campbell has recruited, because that means they've moved back that many steps should there be a second Campbell government in any hopes of them ever being appointed to cabinet. There will be the favored appointees, and then the people who have served their time and are useful for cannon fodder to raise their hand when they're told to, but they want to be kept out of sight as much as possible.
STV, we'll be voting on for MLAs, and then we'll be given a second ballot, I'm told, for the referendum. You are opposed to the STV proposal, right?
Yes, I am. There are several articles on my website at strategicthoughts.com where I've written in opposition to the idea. There are many reasons, in my mind, for opposing it. The most important one is that I believe that in single-member constituencies, I think it is important that everybody has a one-to-one relationship between their vote and one MLA, and that MLA is accountable to a defined group of constituents. I think it is very problematic when we go to multiple-member constituencies, extremely problematic when we go to constituencies as large as seven MLAs, and when we look at constituencies of unequal sizes, not unequal in the sense of differing populations as we have now when you go from the north to urban areas, which is problematic enough, but differing by as much as 100,000 in two-member constituencies in the north to as much as 350,000 people with seven MLAs in the Lower Mainland and South Island. Those are fundamentally different voting systems. The way STV works is that the candidates who are elected are not those who get the most votes in the sense of single-member ridings where whoever has the plurality is the winner, but the way one gets elected with a single transferable vote system, which is used in the Republic of Ireland and Malta, is that a mathematical winning number is determined by dividing the number of valid votes that are cast by the number of MLAs plus one. So if you had, for instance, 200,000 people voting in one of these large constituencies, and you had four MLAs to be elected, you would divide by 4 plus 1 into 200,000. That would give you 40,000 votes as the magic number to be elected. And anybody who got 40,000 votes out of 200,000 would be declared elected. And any count above that 40,000 then gets redistributed to people's second choices.
Over.
It's an extremely complex system to follow. And once it's implemented, people would sit and not know who their MLA is. Each one of the MLAs could point to the other and say, no, I'm not the person that represents you. It's Joe down the block because I'm of a different political stripe than you.
Well, we're talking with David Schreck. StrategicThoughts.com is his very fine website, and you can hear him on CFACTS on Thursday mornings and on with Rafe Mayer on Fridays and elsewhere. Rafe Mayer always says that we often make the perfect the enemy of the good. You don't think at all that the STV proposal is a better way of doing things than what we have now?
I'm surprised. I'm disappointed Rafe is on the yes side of this, as are several other very well-respected journalists. I know Paul Wilcox is on the yes side. I think Vaughn Palmer is a little sympathetic to it, although he hasn't clearly declared himself. There's no question that if we change the system, it would provide things to talk about and commentary for folks in the media for years to come. But I do not think that objecting to STV is a matter of it is less than perfect. I think it is terrible, and I think that the first-past-the-post system is not nearly as flawed as objectors to it would make out. Two principal objections are raised in terms of recent behavior. People say, well, in 1996, the overall popular vote for the province was slightly greater for the Liberals than it was for the NDP if the NDP formed the government. Well, people may be surprised to know that in Malta, where they have a single transferable vote system, exactly the same thing happened in 1981. Notwithstanding having a single transferable vote system with ridings that elected five MLAs in each riding, Malta had an overwhelming popular vote for one party, but the other party formed the government. So changing to STV doesn't eliminate that kind of problem. The problem is rare when it occurs, but it can occur under either form of electoral system. Then they look at 2001, and they say, well, isn't it terrible? The NDP elected only two seats, and the Campbell government took virtually every seat in the legislature. The surprising thing in my mind is that the NDP elected any seats in 2001. I expected a complete and total wipeout. While it would have been nicer to have a slightly larger opposition, the public massively shifted to one side. That is not something that we see very often in politics either, and you cannot or ought not to change the entire electoral system based on these odd occurrences that happen maybe once in a person's lifetime.
Don't you, would you have been more comfortable? But you feel that the first past the post was flawed, right?
I think that it is the best of the alternatives. Every system has flaws, but in my mind, the first past the post system is the least flawed, primarily because it gives one the benefit of a clear one-on-one relationship of one voter and one MLA. There's a clear line of accountability. If one has to make a change, I think an open list, mixed proportional representation system would be my next preference. Not as good in my mind as first past the post, but better than by miles the STV system.
The problem I see, though, with opposing STV, and I'm undecided at this point, but when I hear people like yourself oppose the STV proposals, it's sort of dismissing the work that the Citizens Assembly did do. And they looked at all sorts of systems, and, you know, these were not political scientists. These were just, you know, ordinary British Columbians, and they decided that this was the best system for us.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the nature of the Citizens Assembly. I give them full credit for volunteering an enormous amount of their time for an exercise that would bore most people to death. I mean, studying alternative voting systems is not something that engages most people. And from the numbers on the Citizens Assembly website, in terms of the number of visits to that site gets one-third or less the number of visits to it as there are visits to my website, indicating a general less than enthusiastic level of interest in the general public. And in fact, to this day, on the eve of the vote, the public opinions poll show that most British Columbians don't have a clue of what the proposal is all about. But the Citizens Assembly was not like a jury. It was not a random sample of British Columbians. What they did was they took a random sample in each constituency. From those people, they asked who's interested in electoral reform and wants to participate. Then out of that, they chose the people that would be on the Citizens Assembly. So what we have is a group of people selected for the Citizens Assembly who first indicated that they had a particular interest in participating in the process. That's different than a random sample of all British Columbians. Furthermore, unlike a jury is an adversarial system where you have a prosecution and a defense, each trying to convince the jury to go their way. In the case of the Citizens Assembly, you had a lot of pressure for consensual decision-making with a research staff leading the group to a consensus. There's no comparison to a jury. It was not random. They were well-intentioned, but as one critic pointed out, you could go to the Republic of Ireland and find 160 people who would also put in a recommendation to change the Irish system.
We had a campaign for wards in Vancouver in November, and wards were rejected, and the at-large system that we have in Vancouver is awfully similar to this system. Do you think that's an indication of how this vote will go, at least in Vancouver?
I don't know. What happened in the Vancouver vote, and it's interesting, there had been two previous votes in favor of wards in Vancouver. When it came crunch time and they actually had a civic government that was willing to implement it, they went the other direction. But in the vote in Vancouver, those on the no side launched a very strong campaign against it. There was little or no campaign on the yes side. I was really kind of disappointed in COPE representatives more or less sitting on their hands and waiting to see what would happen when they were faced with an opposition. The Citizens Assembly, the referendum, I think, is a biased question. You're not asked, do you favor BCSTV as explained in pamphlets that have been distributed to every household? Rather, the ballot question is, should British Columbians adopt BCSTV as recommended by the Citizens Assembly? Now, keep in mind that over half of the people that will be voting have absolutely no idea what any of this is about. They may refrain from voting, or they may look at it and say, oh, Citizens Assembly, that must be okay, and it turns into a confidence vote in the Citizens Assembly rather than an informed vote on alternative voting systems. And I think that is an unfair question, but that's the way it's going to be. I think it biases the outcome in favor of change.
Don't you think you should give some credit to some people that they can read through the question and understand it? Or?
I just reflect the fact that the public opinion polls that have been done result in the majority of people saying that they know nothing about it. I have made considerable effort to read and research about it, and I can tell you it is not an easy thing to do. The public opinion polls say that of those who know anything about it, the majority, put it the other way around, less than 10% of those surveyed in the last Ipsos Reid poll on the question of what do you know about STV, less than 10% classified themselves as being very familiar with it. Now, you can always say it's up to people, there's plenty of information, they can make themselves informed, and hopefully they will before May 17th. The likelihood of that, however, is slim and none. So we're going to have many people going to the ballot box and voting on a concept that is not widely understood.
Do you think how people will vote in the general election will matter how they will vote for STV?
No, I think they're completely unrelated. All of the political parties are taking a hands-off position because you get activists of every political stripe on both sides of the question. For instance, Andrew Petter, former Attorney General and Minister of Finance, a prominent New Democrat, is active on the yes side. We've got Aniga Hagen and others who were cabinet colleagues with Andrew who are active on the no side. Similarly, you can find politicians of every political stripe on both sides of the question. So this is not a partisan issue. It is truly a nonpartisan question that is unrelated to anything in the main vote on who's going to form government.
I'll ask you to make some predictions. How do you think the STV referendum will go at this point, 26 days before the voting day?
I'm fearful that it will pass.
I
think that the question is biased, and I think that the editorials I've seen so far and the general media presence has been more on the yes side than the no side.
But isn't the threshold quite high?
Well, it's a double majority. It requires 60% of the overall popular vote province-wide, and it requires at least 50% of the 79 constituencies to have a vote within those constituencies of 50% or more. That may sound like a high threshold, but you have to remember in 1991, BC is the only parliamentary democracy in the world to adopt the rather foreign concept of initiative and recall, as used in California, which is not a parliamentary democracy. And when that was adopted, it was adopted by a vote in excess of 80%.
The general election, how many seats do you think each party will win?
I hesitate to guess at this stage. I think if the vote were called today, the NDP would take between 25 and 30, and the Campbell Liberals would take between 50 and 55. Fortunately, the vote isn't today. A lot can happen in the remaining 26 days of the campaign.
And the Greens will probably win Powell River, do you think? Or?
I would not bet on the Greens taking any seat. If they're going to take any, it's Powell River, Sunshine Coast that they are concentrating on, but I would not bet on that.
Well, David, thanks so much for joining us again. I quite enjoyed having you on.
Thank you for asking me.
And we'll visit strategicthoughts.com, and we'll listen to you on Rafe Mir tomorrow morning.
Thank you, and likewise for your website.
David Schreck here on thecommentary.ca. I'm Joseph Plano.